players that he coached at BU's debuts and stuff like that. And they have like,
they're what?
They're like family.
Did you say debuts? They're debuts?
Yeah. Is that wrong? Debut. Oh my God.
Go ahead.
They're debutantes. They're...
Too many men. Too many men.
Oh, that's way too many.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Too Many Men. My name is Allison Lucan, and I am thrilled to be joined by someone I am now calling the Hank Lundquist of Twitter, and that is Sarah Sivian, because she is both gorgeous and smart. Who knew two things could coexist in one female organism? It's wild. Sarah, you're gorgeous. You're brilliant. How the hell are you?
I'm fantastic. Since we last talked, a Taylor Swift album has hit the airwaves. So, of course, we're all soaking that in.
I'm going to be honest with you. It's actually a little bit too much. Like, I was ready to digest the first chunk, and then the second chunk came, and I still haven't fully processed
it. Is it because it's too long, or like correct, the songs are too heavy?
I think it's too many songs.
Wow. Too many men, too many songs, too many $1 billion to make, but I've been able to take out the things that I love about it.
100%. Oh yeah, for sure. I have my like faves, but that's the thing. I feel like I'm not giving everything its proper due because it literally takes 2 hours to get through one listen.
We have time though. It'll grow on us.
31.
That's a lot.
Which is 13 backwards, which is her number.
I get it. Okay, I get that. I feel like why not stagger the releases, right?
This is what I'm saying to you. But here we are. She's doing it for herself, which we should all do. Speaking of doing it for yourself, sisters are doing it for themselves. Now I've come up with a celebrity comparison for you. Who shall we make?
Oh God,
you?
I got nothing.
Let's see. How about the Lexi LaFleur Brown of hockey journalism, in that you are also gorgeous, witty, have great ability to clap back, and are a published writer. Congrats to Lexi. We're so excited to see her book come out. Shayna, say hi.
Hi. I know we need to have her on as a guest because her TikToks about everything you need to know about being like a wife and girlfriend in hockey.
Amazing.
Are mm-hmm. like, they're things.
She's so real.
Yeah. She is. Yeah.
She keeps saying, get on there. Girlfriends can get on the health insurance. She's like warning them. Like if he says he can't put you on, they can.
It was so funny. I saw her at an event lately and JT was there, and she was like, she was talking about her book. And I was like, you'll have to come on the pod to promote it. And then JT got all salty because he's like, you guys invited me once and I couldn't make it. You've never invited me back. And now you're going to have Lexi on there. I said, Yeah. But no, we want to have JT.
You can also come start the playoffs with us now that you're not as busy.
Correct. We'll make that happen. But anyway, we digress because the playoffs have in fact started in the NHL, my friends. And so there is so much to discuss. The first round always feels like drinking from a fire hose. It's insane, which means in addition to the actual games, we have what, Sarah?
The dramatic pause. I'm dying.
Bit of news. Down by crying at the gym. Fuck it if I can't have him. Taylor Swift, hire me. Okay.
Amazing. Yes, thank you to Benny Drawbars for our drum and drumsticks that Sarah has now interpreted in her Taylor Swift era. We love it. Bit of news time. All right, let's hit these real quick. We've got a lot of stuff going on. First and foremost, some coaching news, some coming just as we went to record today on Wednesday. First up is that Lindy Ruff is hired again in Buffalo. He is the new head coach again. I mean, we talk about the coaching carousel, but this is a little bit ridiculous of a retread. Shayna, what do you make of this hiring for the Sabres?
I mean, it's a choice. I do think they needed to go in a new direction after they really struggled offensively this year after the year before. The one way I get it, besides the stability to the franchise and the name recognition, is when you look at the Devils at their peak under Ruff, it was that really good rush-based team, which is what the Sabres were last year. So if they think, hey, maybe he can help channel that and get them back to their strengths, that works. But I'm only sold on that if you're going to get him like incredible assistant coaches, because we saw the difference from last year to this year when they were downgraded. Like, that was, I think, the key. You can be like a bench manager and be the people manager and help a young team if you can get the right tacticians, Sarah, which I don't think he is.
Sarah, do you think this is good? This is a good reunion, or this is bound for another divorce?
It's a secret third thing. I do like it better than hiring another random old guy that's in the recycling bin. But because they, like you said, like, they have a history of data of under him, and he's a good guy. I like to see him, whatever, succeed. At the same time, it's ballsy if it doesn't work out, right? Like, imagine they don't make the playoffs again. Then you're like, well, this guy, like, it's just, it's ballsy in a way that, like, isn't necessarily bad, but is going to be pushing it if they don't make the playoffs next year.
100%. Well, one coach comes in, one coach comes out. We heard San Jose talk about they weren't sure what they were going to do with their coaches when asked at postseason availability, and now they have made a decision. David Quinn was fired today. He is gone. I don't know how much I feel about this one. This was a team designed to tank. So it would seem the coach helped you reach your objectives. Of course, there were reports that things were worse than expected, and maybe this wasn't exactly the version of very, very bad that they wanted to see. But Shayna, what do we think about David Quinn being out of another job again?
I mean, on the one hand, he didn't build the roster, right? He didn't tear this team down, and there was only so much he was ever going to be able to do. But I think you can say that maybe you expected more from certain players. Like, you look at guys like Anthony Duclair, how poorly he did in San Jose. And, like, you could say, well, you know, he's not a play driver. He never was going to succeed there, but he leaves and the difference is, like, so staggering. To me, I watched David Quinn very closely with the Rangers, and I can see some ways that he can help a team. But I also think you see how young talent in New York, where they were a more well-built team, really struggled under him. I wonder if maybe he's more suited to being an assistant coach at this level and learning on the fly a little bit more before jumping into that head coach position. I think he had a little bit more success there, like, a million years ago when he was in Colorado. I think that might be the move for him for a bit.
That's what I was going to ask you, Sarah. Do we think that David Quinn should be in conversations for future openings, or maybe he needs to do some different things, get some different kind of experience before he's the bench boss rather versus an assistant, like Shayna said?
I know. I think assistant is really the way to go, because assistant coaches, like, people don't really understand what their roles are. A lot of it is kind of moral support for the players, being able to be kind of the good cop when the coach is the bad cop. And I think David Quinn is somebody that absolutely loves his players. Like, he'll still go to, like, players that he coached at BU's debuts and stuff like that. And they have, like,
they're what?
They're like family.
Did you say debuts? They're debuts?
Yeah. Is that wrong? Debut. Oh my God.
Go ahead.
They're debutantes. He will go to those things. He's a lovely guy. He is a really good cop. Who the fuck is going to succeed in this situation right now in San Jose, though? So I don't know if they want to go in a different direction before they start truly building the core when they get all these draft picks now. I think that's totally fair. He had a really good opportunity in New York and struggled. So I think the track record isn't great there. And I think assistant coaches, try it out.
All right. Well, another departure that happened that I actually, not to say I didn't think I was going to take it in, but I found myself a lot more emotional about it than I thought I was going to be. And that was the final game for the Arizona Coyotes. My goodness, none of us can talk today. I watched the Arizona feed for that, and I thought it was handled in a really, really classy way, except for the fact that the puck was dropped by 20-year season ticket holders, but that was probably planned well before this night. But the Coyotes are no more. And as we record, actually, some of the team is in Utah being welcomed to their new home wearing NHL Utah sweatshirts, and there's bandied about future names for this franchise. Did you watch the game, Sarah, that final game for Arizona, and how did you take it in? Did anything stand out to you?
Yeah, it was really sad. I mean, obviously you have to get the win. They got the win. It's just emotional. It reminds me of how much I hate when people make fun of the fan base as opposed to what a disaster that owner has clearly been and that the NHL let him get away with that shit. There's so many laws he broke, sexual harassment, bankruptcy, not paying bills, not paying hotels, like the arena bankrupt. Like there's so many things he did. And Gary was like that is fucked up. And I think, I don't know. I feel bad for the fans and the situation all happened so fast.
100%. Yeah, we're learning a lot more. I mean, to Sarah's point, we knew that Morello was not a necessarily stand-up guy, but even starting that night that a fan reunites Shane Doan with his retirement banner that had literally been left in a closet at Gila Arena. He had a disastrous, and that's being kind, press availability with Gary Bettman after the fact. Shayna, how happy are we that while this was really painful, that it looks like Utah is going to be a better option in terms of doing right by all parts of the organization? Of course, we send our thoughts to those who may not be moving to the new market with the new organization.
Yeah, that's what makes this whole situation so much harder, because you can feel that this had to happen, even if it just meant getting the team away from this owner. If this was how it had to be done, then so be it. And still feel for everyone. And I don't think you could watch that broadcast and not feel for everyone. I like you, I watched the Coyotes broadcast. I watched the entire post game because I could not stop watching it. Like I just felt listening to them, the commentators saying, we don't know if we have jobs tomorrow. And Todd Walsh, who has been there since day one, how connected he is to the team. You know, you could see it from the fans. You could see it from the players and their families on the ice. So you have to feel horrible for them. But I'm really glad that there is a new owner in place who gives a shit and wants to build a hockey community in Utah, right? Like we see it, how he wants to invest in the team and make an exciting on-ice product. And how do you do that? You're going to build a good team and you're going to spend money on contracts and you're going to do what needs to be done to give these players the best that they can have, which hasn't been the case. I think that's so exciting for them because you don't want it that in 5 years, we're talking about poor Clayton Keller rotting away in Arizona and Nick Schmaltz, no one's ever taking his contract. You know, look at them just toiling away and just spinning their wheels because nobody gives enough of a shit to do anything. So I think that's really exciting. I think it's a good thing to have an enthusiastic owner and someone who says it like, hey, we're going to be hands-on as we can. And also like, we're going to hire the best people because we're not hockey experts and we're going to, you know, do this the right way. I think that's an exciting thing. And it's the enthusiasm you see from Bill Foley in Vegas and you see it from the Kraken ownership too, that they want to build a good product. So that's what you should want. You know, there's 32 franchises in this league. If you don't care to do the right things to be an owner, you don't deserve it. You should be vetted properly so you don't come in this situation. So this is going to be, I think, a really nice change of pace for everyone.
Absolutely, it is. We'll look forward to seeing this evolve. It's probably going to be a little bit patched together this first season, but it sounds like year two could be really exciting. All right. If we didn't have 8 rounds of playoff hockey to discuss, we might talk about Greg Doyle being on the shit list for his comments to Caitlin Clark and his poorly executed apology, but I digress. Let's move on to the NHL hockey. My friends, it has been a whirlwind of a time. I will say credit to the schedule so far. It's been pretty easy to follow along, particularly starting off on a weekend when you could just take in pretty much every series, the first 6 at least, without too much overlap. That's been great to see. Would love if the commentators could stay with the series instead of hopping all over. But here we are. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to begin, just like we did last year, the Too Many Men Cup, where we will give you our predictions for each series. And we knew about that ahead of time, so this isn't based on what we've seen already in games. We acknowledge the series have already started. But we're going to go through these 8 series, and each of us is going to give the one storyline that we're most invested in right now. It may or may not have anything to do with what we think is going to happen as far as outcome, but what is really driving our interest in these two teams playing each other. And with that, let us start with the Islanders at Carolina. Carolina wins the first 2 games, has a massive comeback in game 2. There's been some energy around empty nets and how you're supposed to react, and apparently we're not supposed to score into them anymore. Sarah, what is the one storyline that you are tracking in this series right now?
My God, I immediately think of 2. Negative goal differential. Wow. What happened? The Islanders are not good. That is my storyline. Shocking to all. They talked so much shit, annoying as hell, and they're not good.
Shayna, what's the storyline you're invested in here?
How can I follow that up? It's just going to be how the Islanders protect leads. It's been a problem all season. It's gotten better under Pachkwa. You know, like we talk about coaching effects and things like that. Like we really did see them here. They got so much better defensively. They are better off the rush and they're really good at pressuring for turnovers and creating scoring chances off of them. And that's what worked for them game two till it didn't. So I'm curious, like, do you squander another lead if you have it? Obviously, no one wants to do that, but how do you play differently? And how do you let that like come into your mindset without, I guess, like paralyzing you that you're going to fuck up? Because I can understand that happening in like a high pressure situation like this. And the Canes are such a high pressured team and so tenacious that it definitely makes it even harder. And we saw just how quickly they flipped the game. So, you know, like we know the shots and scoring chances are going to be super tilted. And we know the stall line is going to shut down as many of the best Islanders as they can. If it's Nelson, if it's Horvat, we'll see who gets the matchup once it's on Long Island. But how do you protect your leads? How do you fix the mistakes that have like plagued you all year? Or is like this as far as they can go?
Sarah, did you see how she cheated there? She gave us one storyline augmented by 15 sub storylines.
It's one. I'm trying here. Listen, I know Sarah doesn't want to talk about the Islanders and I cannot blame her. So I'm trying here.
Exactly. But she's helping.
My storyline that I'm watching is what something you pointed out, Shayna, but it's a little bit different just in the philosophy of the game is that when I saw the Islanders in person, I saw them once before Wa and once after Wa, and I was impressed with how much they changed their pace of play. And so that's really been, in my opinion, the only thing that's allowing them to kind of keep up with Carolina. So that's the thing I'm watching for between these two. All right, with the series shifting back to go on the island, Sarah, what is your prediction for this series? Who wins and in how many games?
Canes in five.
Canes in five. All right, Shayna?
Yep, I'm with you.
I am also Canes in five, but I bet it could happen in four. We shall see. All right, let's move on to another series that does unfortunately seem pretty tilted one way, and that is the Washington Capitals at the Rangers. This is another one where the home team, the Rangers, have won the first two games, looking pretty much in control of play overall. Ovechkin looks like he's back to his beginning of the season struggles. Really a non-factor, has a playoff game without a single shot on goal for the first time in I forget how many years, but it was quite significant. We're going to see if the Capitals can rally and attack. There's been some hits. Oshie leaves the game for a little bit as well. Sarah, what's your storyline for Caps Rangers?
Is Rempe actually good? And how are they going to make sure, like, give him enough respect to make sure he knows he doesn't always have to fight? Like, we're babying him. I know he likes to fight, whatever. But it's like, I think it was so funny that Shayna and Dom and Sean had that, like, storyline, Tom Wilson versus Matt. And it's that actually ended up being the storyline. And it's Tom Wilson is such an effective player, but he's been marred by really careless suspensions his entire career. And it's like the seasons where he gets fewer suspensions, he's so effective for that team. It's like, can we figure it out here?
I love that on the Tom Wilson scale, it's really a measure of how many suspensions, not if there were any. It's just how many.
Yeah.
Shayna, what's your storyline for this one?
Yeah, like you could definitely go down that path of like all the rough shit, especially like as the game goes on, it gets worse each game so far. But it's going to be Alex Ovechkin. Because we saw him turn his game around so much in the second half of the season, both at even strength and on the power play. The Caps, since the All-Star break, have the best power play in the league. They scored at the highest rate. So the fact that he doesn't look as noticeable is eye-catching. And, you know, they're going to go back to Washington now. They're going to control the matchups. I assume that means getting him away from Fox and Lindgren as much as possible, and maybe even Schneider Miller, trying to focus him against the Gustafson Trouba pair, because I think that's your weak link, and go against the Barkley Gaudreau line instead of the Zibanejad line. I won't be surprised if that's the matchup they aim for, and if it frees up Ovechkin a bit, because they did match up last game and Ovechkin's line was generating more, but he's just not shooting the puck.
All right, for me, it's going to be special teams play because obviously that's has been, although a little bit different this year, that has been where Ovechkin has been able to maybe turn things on. But so far, both teams really, really quiet there. So we'll see. I think if one team can get something going on the power play, that's going to just lock this one down completely. Sarah, what's your pick for this series? Winner and number of games.
I know. I said Caps in seven because I just like had a vibe, which was stupid because they objectively are extremely bad, like a bad playoff team. But I just thought Ovechkin, like Charlie Lindgren, who has played well, it's just not enough for the President's Trophy winners. I'm going to go Rangers in four.
Perfect. Wow. Shayna?
I know. I mean, I can admit it now. I will.
Yeah, Shayna? I think I originally went with Rangers in six there. At this point, I'm kind of wondering if it's going to be five. But I could see Washington stealing two games, right? Like, we've seen bad teams do that before in the playoffs. So I'll stick with that. I'll say Rangers in six.
Yeah, I said Rangers in five, and I'm going to stick with that as well. All right, moving on to one final series in the East that is also at a score of 2-0, although perhaps a much more even matchup in what's happening on the ice, and that is Tampa Bay at Florida. Last game, game two, just incredible performances in net by Sergei Bobrovsky and Andre Vasilevsky. Tampa Bay keeps pushing, but they just can't get over the hump. Even in that last game, the first of the postseason to go to OT, we're not sure if Sam Bennett's going to be able to return after blocking a shot with his hand. Sarah, the storyline for you in the Battle of Florida.
Oh my God, Bobrovsky's save. That's what it is. And it's the two goaltenders dueling. Like you said it, it just, with so much electricity everywhere else in the ice, it's like both of these goaltenders have to be absolutely on point, and they have been.
Shayna, what's your storyline?
Yeah, the goaltenders are a hard one to not pick, especially after like Bob. Like I watched that, like $10 million save. Good work. It's got to be Barkov, right? Like to me, game one, right off the bat, you saw him and Forsling. They don't allow anything when those two are on the ice together. It's the little plays that he was making to force turnovers that I'm like, there you go. That is all-star, Selke winner, Alexander Barkov, who's having just a great year this season. And you can see that Kucherov point line didn't get to pop off as much, and it's because they faced a lot of Barkov in game one. I think it's like the shots were tilted for Florida, but I think the quality was a little bit more even. So I'm curious, you know, how that changes when we see them shift back to Tampa Bay, because I can't see Tampa just rolling over and dying just yet, but I wonder if they can get away from Barkov, if they'll have any chance.
Yeah, and that's for me, my storyline that I'm watching right now is, can the Tampa Bay Lightning superstars become themselves again? Because they can be difference makers. We saw what happened in the regular season with points going all over the place and just effective power play from them. So I want to see, particularly with everything shifting back to Tampa now, can they maybe make a push and reestablish kind of their legacy of what they've been proven to do in the past? So we shall see. All right, Sarah, who's winning this one?
Panthers in five.
Ooh, spicy, Shayna.
They're just good.
Shayna?
Panthers in six. I would never want to be in it. They have to end in six. I wouldn't want to play Tampa in game seven, even though we know the teams are so different right now.
Yeah, I'm going Florida in six also. Sarah, if you win that one, I'm going to give you an extra point just for that, because that's a very nice call. I like it. All right, we saved the best one for last in the East, and that is because the narratives are just delicious, and that is Toronto at Boston. Although impressively, this series is tied one apiece as it shifts back to Toronto. Boston is keeping up with their goaltender rotation to hopefully expel the demons of last year's postseason. And we don't know what's going on with William Nylander. We've seen him skating. He looks fine, but he has not played in the first two games, and we're not sure if he'll play in game three. It's a really, really interesting one so far, and just all of the drama, the narratives, it's been a blast just to roast in that. Sarah, what's the storyline for you between the Bears and the Leafs?
It's the Leafs stealing a game in Boston without Nylander. It's like, that was your chance to close it out if you're the Bruins. Like, Nylander's not in. You got to win that. And just their defense was atrocious that game.
Shayna?
I'm going to go with Mitch Marner. I don't want to pile on because I think everyone is so fucking mean about everything. And when it comes to the Leafs, it's times 1,000. But I mean, his game two was a red flag. I think it was like 10-6 shot attempts for Boston in his minutes. And like, I think his final number for that line, they had what, like a 13 or 14% expected goal share, 5-on-5. It was Nyes, Tavares, and Marner. And it's like, it wasn't his best regular season, especially in the first half. And we saw it, like, he wasn't passing as much and he wasn't as great defensively as he normally is. And he seemed to kind of start turning things around at the end of the year, but then you come to this, and I know the pressure is high and you know whatnot. Now you don't have Nylander, so everything else has changed from what it was. But that is a big issue for Toronto because, I mean, their depth is what it is, right? And we saw guys like Domi focus on playing hockey, so you had the Matthews line be more effective in game two, so that helps. But you want to have more than one scoring line to rely on, and if you don't have Nylander, you're already down like one of your biggest contributors.
100%. Yeah, I'm going to go with the intangibles of pressure. Even though the Leafs won their first series in, what, 206 years last year in Tampa, they still have so much pressure, particularly returning to this matchup of a series. And now they're going to go play in front of their home fans. And so you can only imagine what that is all going to be like. So that is what I'm going to see, is if Toronto can continue to make a case that they are expelling all the demons, or that they are still stuck in exactly where everyone said they have been for forever. All right, Sarah, who's your pick?
I'm going Leafs in seven. I was in the building for game two and I was just disturbed. Like, it's the only, and I know it was only a one goal win, but I was disturbed. If you actually watched the game, it was like, what the hell are you doing? They can't play. The worst part is Ullmark was playing really well in net. He kept them in so much and they just kept fucking around and finding out. And the Leafs kept like, they'd get a goal overturned and then Tavares, the captain, would score. And then they'd score 14 seconds after the Bruins would score. And then you get the Austin Matthews goal. And it's like, Austin Matthews has started cooking. I think he's going to get it. I gambled $1 on him to get a hat trick tonight. So Leafs in seven.
Shayna, what's your pick?
I'm with you. Leafs in seven. I was torn on this series. I let the dogs kind of help me decide. Two out of three said the Leafs. So I went with that because it was a coin flip to me. I think, like you mentioned, game two, like, it was such a different vibe. I think the fact that the Leafs were stopped trying to play like playoff hockey and do stupid shit. And we're like, oh yeah, this is how we were successful all year. Let's try to play the game. If they can remember to do that, like, I think they can win the series.
All right. I purely for the vibes of it all, am going Boston in six, because that would mean that they would win it in Toronto. And I'm just here for chaos. So that's my pick. This is our first differentiator. We'll see who wins out on that one. All right, let's shift our focus to the West. And by my own personal Insta ranking, we'll go from most compelling so far to least, or it was from least to most, excuse me. And there's only been one game in this series, and by the time you hear this, we will have seen another. But gosh, Los Angeles at Edmonton, another rematch for the third straight year. And my goodness gracious, if Edmonton did not look completely in control of that, 5 assists for Connor McDavid, who was supposedly injured before the season. Zach Hyman, friend of the pod, another hat trick for him. I don't know. I don't see how LA can keep up with where Edmonton is right now. That's what I thought going into the series. Sarah, what's the most compelling thing you're watching for here?
God, I'd like to see like a Byfield welcome to the show. Like, he was really good all season when he got put in these good scenarios. So I feel like at the very least, it just feels like Oilers year in a lot of ways. I don't think they're going to win the cup, but I think they're going to get close to it. And there's a lot of good storylines with that. But from the King side, it's like, at least you might have an emerging player that took a few years, but is potentially here.
I like that. Shayna, what's your storyline?
It's going to be the matchup against McDavid. I feel like I keep talking about matchups, but they're like, hey, they matter. And with series going back, you know, back and forth, like, we're going to see differences here. The Kings have the advantage of two shutdown centers. You have Kopitar, you have Deneau. They both play really hard workloads, and Deneau's is very slightly harder. So it makes sense why they gave him McDavid. They did that all regular season and last postseason. Problem is, it didn't work last postseason, and it didn't work in the regular season. So they tried it again, and I think that's the wrong decision. So I wonder if they flip it to put Kopitar on McDavid, who has done a much better job containing him. Because against the Oilers, especially the Kings, like, with the way they play now since the coaching change, I get it. You want to try to slow down and contain the Oilers, but if you're only forcing them to play defense, if you're only playing defense against them and you're not forcing them to play defense at all, you're not winning the series. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch if we see that change. And maybe we do, does which line, starts thriving when they're in Los Angeles. And, that is going to be important. That also, one minor tweak. Hold on, I have to add this.
You're getting penalized. Go ahead.
Wait, but this is so important. Don't do the wave.
I'm subtracting points.
Ever again, please.
Agreed. Second that.
Two goals against after you did it. Don't do it.
All right. Well, similar to earlier, this is a matchup of, instead of talking about keeping up with your speed like I did with the Islanders, this is about shutting down the speed of Edmonton. And, we always talk about, and everyone whines about the 1-3-1 for LA, but it's effective. And you see teams just get mired in the muck in the neutral zone. And it was not effective against Edmonton. And so if they can't find a challenge for that overall team speed and allowing the rush to get through, then I think that they are complete and utter toast. Sarah, what's your pick?
Oilers in four.
Ooh, Sarah is going hard today. I love it. Shayna?
Oilers in five. This isn't years past where Kings can maybe disrupt things. Yeah. No.
It's not happening. Zach Hyman's research, or surgeons, should we say, it's just too severe.
100%. I'm also going Oilers in five there. It just doesn't. Now watch, LA will win 6-1 tonight or something like this, and three people will get hurt. Okay, let's move on to another series that only has one game. And I think for quite a few of us, this was a little bit of a surprise in terms of the outcome. But there were some surprises in the lineups, although we're used to these kind of surprises now, and that is Vegas at Dallas. Vegas travels down to the heart of Texas and wins the first game. Jake Oettinger, who's been a little bit up and down this season, was not at his best. And of course, Mark Stone returns. And of course, Mark Stone scores the first goal of the game. Dallas, admittedly, I've said this everywhere, Dallas was my cup champion pick. So this is going to be interesting to see what happens going forward. As Sarah said last episode, you don't worry until you see a team lose at home. And that's what Dallas did to open this one, although they lost at home in game one against the Kraken. So who's to say? Sarah, what's standing out for you in terms of the Vegas Mark Stones against the Dallas Oettingers?
Well, it's depth versus star power. I think I've lauded the depth of the Dallas Stars all season. They have the team that has everything, but how important is having everything evenly distributed versus having that one person that says, fuck your matchup, fuck everything. I can still come rise above and score a goal. And obviously, okay, I'm not going to say it. There's two storylines, so I'm sure Shayna will say the second one. But for me, it's just kind of, okay, how do we evaluate teams if the Stars end up not getting past the first round?
Shayna?
Are you looking for me to go Mark Stone long-term IR here as the narrative? Because I'm not.
No, okay, thank you. Thank you.
I've been yelled at for saying, guys, he still had a lacerated spleen. You probably don't want to go through that. The worst taste is that it's more than one player coming off LTIR. But no, for me, it's kind of similar to you. It's secondary scoring versus secondary scoring I'm curious about, because we look at Vegas last year and everyone talked about how they had multiples at each position, right? Two shutdown defenders and two pairs you had to match up against, and then two shutdown forwards on each line and then scoring through your lineup. I looked at it they had forward pairs on three lines and you can interchange that third player. So do I expect Jack Eichel and Jonathan Marchessault to pop off offensively? Absolutely. Do I expect the Jason Robertson line to do the same thing? Sure. But I want to see how, Wild Bill scores. I want to see the Stone line with Hurdle contribute, which they already did. And then for the Star side, that Marchment line looked excellent in game one. And I like that we see contributions from the young guys, the Wyatt Johnsons and the Logan Stankovits of the world. I mean, Stankovic stealing the puck from Mark Stone, it was perfect. But to me, it's who has more of that, and who's going to get those contributions from up and down the lineup versus who's going to rely on their star power to win this one.
100%. All right. Well, mine would have been basically what you guys said. So I'll pick, Jake Ottinger, sure. Because that
thank
was
you. That's what I was waiting
okay.
for.
Okay.
Because that is certainly an area where I thought that, you know, again, to your point, Sarah, this is a Dallas team that has such incredible depth and a balance of the depth. They had goaltending, they had defense, they had offense. But if one of those three legs of the stool breaks down, you are in a lot more trouble than we all thought they might be in terms of really pushing for a championship. So I want to see if Otter can get back to where he had kind of rebounded to at the end of the season, where he was making saves and looked like he was bored doing it. But yeah, he will be a difference maker for me, in addition to all the depth that you guys mentioned.
Do you think this postseason will kind of define him a little bit more? Because we think of like year one, right? We all saw him in that Flame series and we're all like, holy shit, playoff Ottinger. And last year, I remember we were talking about it. Like, is he hurt? We're both a little underwhelmed.
Well, played too much last year. That was the whole thing. Do you think
this will make a difference in his reputation?
No, I don't think so. Only because, like, to Sarah's point, if they fall out, I think that's why we have to remember the playoffs are wild, right? Like, while the championship is what matters, that's not the true measure of what your team is. You have to get lucky and be good all at the same time. Plus also, like, we're not talking about Toronto, unfortunately, right? Like, no, but seriously, like, this is
no,
a market.
Right.
We keep talking about how we forget about the Stars and they're like freaking great. So I think that he gets a little bit more leash. But if this happens again, a third year, then I think you talk about it. Like, that's what trailed Bobrovsky around for so long, was he couldn't produce in the playoffs.
I think the person that, like, I'd think this about is Jason Robertson. I think it's time for him to be the star of the Stars.
I would love that.
Hot take.
I would love that. Love, love, love that. All right, Sarah, what's your pick for this one?
God. Golden Knights in seven.
Wow. All right, Shayna?
I'm going to go Stars in seven. I got to stick with it.
That was my pick, Stars in seven. And I really want to see them do it because I do think they've just been built in such a compelling way that people aren't paying enough attention to.
And right. Also, this is the decider in their like recent hit, right? It was Dallas over Vegas in the first Western Conference final, the reverse, the second one. So it's kind of like their little rubber match here.
Yes. Yes, for sure. All right. Let's keep moving on. This one was one that, again, is surprising people a little bit. And this is Nashville at Vancouver, other than perhaps the worst travel of any series in round one. This one was interesting. Vancouver looked really, really strong in the first game. Seemed like they were going to be able to put this one in the driver's seat for them. And then Nashville comes back and plays really, really effectively. And while we have a lot of question marks and concern about Thatcher Demko being out week to week, is what Rick Tocchet said, I didn't think he was the problem in that loss last night that puts this series at 1-1. Sarah, what is your storyline that you're paying attention to for Nashville not making it easy on the Canucks?
When you think about the run the Predators were on versus the heart attack comebacks the Canucks had, but they would like win more consistently throughout the year, but they would do it in a really hard way. It's like you can't have Casey DeSmith in net and come back. Like, it's just the way they reacted. I agree with you that it wasn't really kind of Demko's absence that was the reason for the loss in game two, but it was also like I felt a sense of panic around the team during it.
100%. 100%. Shayna, what are you watching?
I want to see how the Predators play at 5-on-5 because so far I'm not as impressed. This to me is one of the most interesting series of round one, and that was before the Demko injury. It was because they both came into the playoffs with some of the best 5-on-5 play of the second half of the season. You look at Nashville when they turned things around after the canceled U2 concert, and they were a top three team in expected goal creation and expected goal suppression. We haven't seen that so far. The way they won last night, you can win a couple games that way, but it was like this suffocating defensive shell where they blocked 40% of the shot attempts that Vancouver created. And like, I think some of it was just like bad luck for the Canucks last night, but I don't think that's how you get out of this series. So I want to see if they can pick up the pace a little bit and try to take it to the Canucks a little bit more when they're back on home ice.
Yeah, for me, what I'm watching is puck management. If you went back and looked at that first game, it was Vancouver that was really winning the battles and like dominating in terms of winning loose pucks in the offensive zone. And, you know, last night there's big turnovers, goals off turnovers, and just not the, I mean, I don't want to pile on, but the Pettersson was sort of pass situation. Like,
yeah.
So for me, that is what is going to matter here. And that is what will differentiate Vancouver and get them to a win. If they're going to do that, is they have to be back to that game one tenacity. And so I totally agree, Sarah. I think the vibes were off and that maybe they were like, oh crap, we can't, you know, make it harder on Casey DeSmith, but it's ultimately going to come down for me to puck management. Mm-hmm. Sarah, who's winning?
Canucks in seven.
Okay. Shayna?
Stick with my original pick. Nashville in seven.
Oh, I did not know that was your original pick.
Yeah, I was torn. And Duke said they're going to the Stanley Cup final. So I felt like vindication.
Wow.
In it, because she had Florida losing in the Cup final last year and was right, that I'm like, you know what? You're on to something.
All right. Well, I am going to go with Canucks in six. That's just, I've thought that Vancouver's been strong all year, and this is another team that honestly I'd like to see go deep and just get rewarded for what they were in the regular season. So there we are. All right. One more series to predict that honestly might have been one of the funnest games. I felt so bad for fans who were watching the four games on Sunday, because after the first game in this series to then go to Vancouver, Nashville, while it was a good game, it was like, well, this is boring because we just watched chaos, and that chaos is coming from the series that is the Colorado Avalanche at Winnipeg. I thought it was interesting hearing Cale Makar talk about how he's like, we haven't started on the road in forever. But this is another one where right away goaltending is becoming an issue. Georgi Georgiev, full name, is little bit sketchy in game one, but he's solid in game two. And I feel like no one is talking enough about the fact that friend of the pod, Connor Hellebuck, who is an outstanding goaltender, has let in how many goals now? But just total chaos.
10 in two games.
Thank you, Shayna. Thank you.
I'm with you.
But just insane stuff. And meanwhile, Colorado is without Jonathan Drouin, someone who was always expected to be a big part of working with Nathan MacKinnon and maximizing him. And then there's the whole narrative of giving Nathan MacKinnon a second cup after what he did in the regular season. These are can't miss games. Sarah, what is most thrilling or interesting to you?
I do think it's the goaltending situation. Like, I think it's hilarious that you have a super team, which is the Colorado Avalanche. And then at the same time, it's like, I don't want to make fun of Georgiev, but he's kind of some guy in net when it could have been like, I don't know, like you build this team and it's going to have like some flaws, like pick your flaw. But it's interesting. It's so hard to actually, this is the most fun series, but it's the hardest for me to analyze because it's just like, what the hell is going on? Which is why it's fun. So yeah. I feel like the storyline is the friends we made along the way. And I can only think of the storyline when it's all over.
I love that. But it is chaotic. Shayna, have you been able to discern out yet what you think is going to be the biggest factor?
I literally don't know. And it's so hard because there's so much going on. Like the goaltending, like you said, you can't not talk about it. Like last night, that Shifley goal set up by Velarde on Georgiev, I thought could have ended the game right there because he's someone that gets so frustrated, right? Like, I feel like he's someone that doesn't cool off as well after goals against. And he did. I was shocked. And maybe it's because he knows the pressure of like, hey, you might not be starting next game if you screw up. There's no reason for you to, you know? So it's going to be, I think my thing to watch will be how the team tries to make up for that and play in front of him, because it's been so chaotic. And I think we're seeing really good plays by the Jets to generate offense. And we know them to be so strong on the back end, but like you look at some of those moves from their top line, LA sure would help to have Velarde right now. Go like, they're bringing it. So how does Colorado kind of step up, especially like they've been without Girard, who could be back for game three. How do you keep stepping up to give your goalie the support while still playing to your strengths offensively?
Yeah, for me, this one is a tricky one. It's just hella fun to watch, really. But
oh my God, it rules.
But, you know, there are some absences and question marks roster-wise for Colorado, but I feel like a lot less than last year. And, you know, you lose Val Nichushkin last year too, real early in their playoff run that was admittedly short for them. So I'm interested to see how much health they can sustain or return to and then be at full power to show us really what they are, even though I just said what you are is not really what you are in the playoffs, but here we are. All right, Sarah, tell me who's winning.
Avs in seven.
Okay, Shayna.
I'm gonna stick with that too. I'm so torn on this one. It's like the hardest series to decide, but I'll go Avs in seven.
Okay. I am going to go with the peg, my friends, but I'm going to go with seven. All right. We're writing these down for y'all who don't remember, or maybe weren't with us last year. We do tally up wins, losses, and with series length being the differentiator, and we will award the non-existent Too Many Men Cup just to keep our egos happy. That's where we're at. We will keep our eye on these series. We will keep bringing you our hottest of hot takes. But if there's things that you all see, let us know. We are definitely also going to pay a proper amount of attention to the tremendous WAG jackets that are out there this season. Some good, some question marky, and we will let you know our thoughts. But as always, we end every episode with our very favorite game, and that is Fuck, Marry, Kill. And for this episode, Sarah, as always, you go first. We are going to talk about hashtag playoff discourse. There has been an inordinate amount of attention to some crazy things. So here are your choices. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Hockey discourse, FMK, long-term IR, playoff officiating, or empty net shots being too hard? Go.
I'm marrying empty net shots being too hard because I just think you sound ridiculous. Like, there's no way anybody is complaining about that unless, like, the most honest way is saying, like, you're mad your team wants. Like, there's no other way around that. And you know what? I respect, like, just caring about your team. I don't know. I am going to kill long-term IR. I'm going to kill playoff officiating because it's like it's insufferable. It's been the longest, most enduring topic of playoff discourse. And it's like, I'm out discoursed at this point because I think we all have a point. We all have a point and we all use it in a different way. And I don't like that. I wish we could all, it's like, we all need to form a union and come as one to the league and air our grievances. Not like, oh, our team's biased against the refs are biased against the Leafs. Every team says this. No, we all need to come together and agree. And this is why we'll never get universal healthcare or anything like this, because we can never just agree on one thing, even though it would benefit us all. And finally, I am going to the long-term IR, because it's funny how if GMs truly had a problem with this, they would have made this go away, but they know at one point it might benefit them. And like, I want to look, I'm thinking long-term here. 5 years down the road, a team that has been making fun of Vegas, when it happens to their team, it's going to be okay.
100%. Shayna, your picks.
I'm going to kill the LTIR discourse. Everybody should want there to be a mechanism for it, because you don't want it that your player's leg breaks because he blocks a shot and the NHL just goes, all right, tough. Sorry. Deadline passed. You can't call anyone up. Not a problem. You don't want that. There's ways, I'm sure, to make it better, and ways maybe to have the NHL a little bit more involved in the injury process. Check on everyone to make sure, like, hey, this is really kosher, because Vegas, not just for Stone, activating three players can leave a salty taste, but you want to have it. And they're not the only ones to abuse it before. Tampa did, Chicago did, everyone's going to. So get over it. I will fuck the empty net discourse. Is it so stupid? Yes. But does it show you care about your team? Yes. Do I understand why the Islanders were mad because they blew their game in a matter of seconds? I'm sure that hurt more than knowing you're going to lose for 20 minutes. Like, hey, we're down 5-0. There's a difference. But it all started with the Leafs. So I have to like it for that. I have to like it just 1% for that. So I can't kill it off. But it's a lot. And then I'll marry the officiating, because I do get it. We all want a higher standard, right? And I think that there's a way to have a middle ground here that is keeping the human element, and maybe even just for the playoffs, add an eye in the sky. Add something to keep the human element, but have an extra perspective. And Allison, like you've said forever, have an official available for questioning after the games, because everybody, right? We talk about owners, coaches, players, you have to be held accountable. So do the referees. It's frustrating. It's annoying to listen to people complain about it. Like in my mentions, people are like, well, your guy did this. I'm like, my guy didn't do anything. I just posted a clip of a video with no caption. Please fuck off. But I get why we're frustrated, especially at this level.
All right. I am going to marry long-term IR because I just love the rage every single year when this happens. And two things, people, first of all, like, teams are not going to risk lying about this, because we've seen Ottawa literally lose a first round draft pick for not disclosing something on a trade. Do you think if a team is found to be quote unquote cheating with LTIR, that they could get their entire cup run just wiped out? I bet that that would be something that would be in play. So I don't think teams are going to play fast and loose with this. And also, and I have said this other places, like in every other area of the game, we ask teams to do their best to find margins of improvement that someone else hasn't found. We talk about that with scouting. We talk about that with drafting. We talk about that with coaching and X's and O's. But when we're talking about actual dollars, things that are actual currency and people getting more value out of it, then everyone like loses their minds. So I'm here for it. And like, just if you're mad that your team hasn't figured out other ways to get the most that they can in terms of making a run for a cup, then, you know, ask your leadership to be better. I'm going to fuck empty net goal shots being hard, because it's just, again, the discourse. Like, it's so wild. And like you said, I just can't. You're just pissed that your team lost. Like, your team shouldn't have been in a situation anywhere where they had to pull the goaltender and potentially risk an empty net goal against. So deal with it. And I am, like Sarah, going to kill officiating, mainly because while I am very, very passionate about it, it's just not going to change anytime soon. So let's just stop, because it is what it is, unfortunately. All right. We did it. We made it through an entire first round analysis, made picks, and covered hockey news all in one episode. We put our little lady brains together and just made it all work out. We want to thank y'all for such kind words and listens when we had Hillary Knight Baller on last episode. She was the best. Thank you again, Hillary. You rock. If you want to be part of the Too Many Men community, you can follow us on socials. We are at @2_much_man on the Twitter and on the Instagram. And if you want to rock, like I am, some Too Many Men merch, you can get a cool hat like this, a toque, a sweatshirt, a notebook, a switch case, even watch bands by going to toomanymenmerch.com. And remember that we don't take profits from that. We turn those funds around like we did to pause in honor of torts in March. But we use that money to do what we ask you all to do, which is, in any way, in any size, please do something, no matter how big or small, to make sure that hockey truly is for everyone. We will talk to y'all soon.
Love you.
Bye. We'll be right back.